You're listening to The Philosopher's Note on the coddling of the American mind. More wisdom in less time.
Hi, this is Brian. Welcome to The Philosopher's Notes on the coddling of the American mind. How good intentions and bad ideas are setting up a generation for failure. By Greg Lukianoff and Jonathan Haidt. As always, let's kick it off with a quote. This is a book about wisdom and its opposite. We will show you that these three great untruths, the untruth of fragility, the untruth of emotional reasoning, and the untruth of us versus them, and the policies and political movements that draw on them are causing problems for young people, universities, and more generally, liberal democracies. To name just a few of these problems, teen anxiety, depression, and suicide rates have risen sharply in the last few years. The culture on many college campuses has become more ideologically uniform, compromising the ability of scholars to seek truth and of students to learn from a broad range of thinkers. Extremists have proliferated on the far right and far left, provoking one another to ever deeper levels of hatred. Social media has channeled partisan passions into the creation of a call-out culture. Anyone can be publicly shamed for saying something well-intentioned that someone else interprets uncharitably. New media platforms and outlets allow citizens to retreat into self-confirmatory bubbles, where their worst fears about the evils of the other side can be confirmed and amplified by extremists and cyber trolls intent on sowing discord and division. The three great untruths have flowered on many college campuses, but they have their roots in earlier education and childhood experiences, and they now extend from the campus into the corporate world and the public square, including national politics. They are also spreading outward from American universities to universities throughout the English-speaking world. These great untruths are bad for everyone. Anyone who cares about young people, education, or democracy should be concerned about these trends, end quote. That is Greg Lukianoff and Jonathan Haidt from The Coddling of the American Mind. I've had this book for years and have been meaning to read it for as long. During a micro sabbatical in which I took a break from travel and went deep to get ahead on content, I decided to spend a week with Professor Jonathan Haidt, a man I deeply admire. I had read and loved his first book, The Happiness Hypothesis, and decided I'd spend a week hanging out with him one-on-one as I read this book, along with another one called The Righteous Mind, Why Good People Are Divided by Politics and Religion. I'm typing this weeks before the 2024 election, so this book is especially timely. And his most recent book called The Anxious Generation, How the Great Rewiring of Childhood is Causing an Epidemic of Mental Illness. As expected, the experience of spending that much time immersed in Jonathan Haidt's wisdom was profound. Now, Jonathan is the Thomas Cooley Professor of Ethical Leadership at New York University's Stern School of Business. He obtained his PhD in social psychology from the University of Pennsylvania in 1992 and taught at the University of Virginia for 16 years. He's one of the world's leading researchers and thinkers on the science of moral and political psychology. Greg Lukianoff is the president of the Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression, or FIRE, and one of the country's most passionate defenders of free expression. He's the author of a number of books, including his most recent called The Canceling of the American Mind. Cancel culture undermines trust and threatens us all, but there is a solution, and has written on free speech issues in the nation's top newspapers. You can learn more about them and the book at thecoddling.com. There's also a documentary you can rent to watch. I've got a link directly to it in the note. And another link to a great trailer for the book as well. Just search The Coddling of the American Mind movie or documentary and you'll find what I'm talking about. Now, one of the things I most appreciated about the book was the way in which Jonathan and Greg embodied the virtue of intellectual humility. They are incredibly rigorous in both the precision of their thinking and the respectful humble tone with which they communicate their views. Reading this book was an education in not just the theory of how to engage in thoughtful discussions about challenging subjects, but a wonderful demonstration of that theory in practice. The book is packed with big ideas. I'm excited to share some of my favorites, so let's get to work. First big idea, the three great untruths. Quote, this is a book about the three great untruths that seem to have spread widely in recent years. Number one, the untruth of fragility. What doesn't kill you makes you weaker. Number two, the untruth of emotional reasoning. Always trust your feelings. Number three, the untruth of us versus them. Life is a battle between good people and evil people. While many propositions are untrue, in order to be classified as a great untruth, an idea must meet three criteria. Number one, it contradicts ancient wisdom, ideas found widely in the wisdom literatures of many cultures. Number two, it contradicts modern psychological research on well-being. And number three, it harms the individuals and communities who embrace it. End quote. Now, the book has four parts. Part one is all about those three bad ideas and features a chapter that defines and explains each of them. Part two is all about examples of those bad ideas in action. Part three asks and answers the question, how did we get here? By unpacking the six underlying causes. Part four is all about wising up and focuses on how we can create wiser kids, wiser universities, and wiser societies. In the very last chapter, Greg and Jonathan tell us that they can summarize the entire book by contrasting the three opening quotations and the three great untruths. Now, here's what they share. In the note, I've got a little table, right, with three columns and four rows. The first row at the top says psychological principle. Then the next column next to the psychological principle is the wisdom that goes with that psychological principle. Then the column next to that is the great untruth. So psychological principle, wisdom, great untruth. Those are the three columns. Then you've got the next three rows are those psychological principles related to the untruths and the wisdom. So the first psychological principle is young people are anti-fragile. The wisdom is you got to prepare the child for the road, not the road for the child. The great untruth is what doesn't kill you makes you weaker. The second psychological principle is we are all prone to emotional reasoning and the confirmation bias. The wisdom is your worst enemy cannot harm you as much as your own thoughts unguarded. This is a Buddha quote. But once mastered, no one can help you as much, not even your father or mother. The great untruth is always trust your feelings. Don't think rationally. The third psychological principle, we are all prone to dichotomous thinking and tribalism. The wisdom here is this. The line dividing good and evil cuts through the heart of every human being. The great untruth related to that psychological principle is life is a battle between good people and evil people. Now, with that high-level wisdom and its opposites framed up, let's look at some practical ideas on how to go about leveling up our wisdom. Next big idea, the truth. We are anti-fragile. Quote, no one has done a better job of explaining the harm of avoiding stressors, risks, and small doses of pain than Nassim Taleb. The Lebanese-born statistician, stock trader, and polymath who is now a professor of risk engineering at New York University. In his book, Anti-Fragile, Taleb explains how systems and people can survive the inevitable black swans of life and, like the immune system, grow stronger in response. Taleb asks us to distinguish three kinds of things. Some, like China teacups, are fragile. They break easily and cannot heal themselves, so you must handle them gently and keep them away from toddlers. Other things are resilient. They can withstand shocks. Parents usually give their toddlers plastic cups precisely because plastic can survive repeated falls to the floor, although the cups do not benefit from such falls. But Taleb asks us to look beyond the overused word resilience and recognize that some things are anti-fragile. Many of the important systems in our economic and political life are like our immune systems. They require stressors and challenges in order to learn, adapt, and grow. Systems that are anti-fragile become rigid, weak, and inefficient when nothing challenges them or pushes them to respond vigorously. He notes that muscles, bones, and children are anti-fragile. Just as spending time in bed leads to muscle atrophy, complex systems are weakened, even killed, when deprived of stressors. Much of our modern structures and world has been harmed with top-down policies and contraptions, which do precisely this, an insult to the anti-fragility of system. This is the tragedy of modernity. As with neurotically overprotective parents, those trying to help are often hurting us the most. Then Hyde continues by saying, Taleb opens the book with a poetic image that should speak to all parents. He notes that wind extinguishes a candle but energizes a fire. He advises us not to be like candles and not to turn our children into candles. You want to be the fire and wish for the wind, end quote. As you probably guessed, that's from the first chapter of the book on the untruth of fragility, what doesn't kill you makes you weaker. Right before that passage, Greg and Jonathan say, and I quote them again, of course, Nietzsche's original aphorism, what doesn't kill me makes me stronger, is not entirely correct if taken literally. Some things that don't kill you can still leave you permanently damaged and diminished. But teaching kids that failures, insults, and painful experiences will do lasting damage is harmful in and of itself. Human beings need physical and mental challenges and stressors, or we deteriorate. Now, I want to be really clear about the fact that we don't start out fragile and then work our way up to becoming anti-fragile. We are, all caps, designed to be anti-fragile. Period. It's not up for debate. But when we overprotect our kids and ourselves and avoid the very stressors that would forge our anti-fragile strength, we become fragile. Now, that's not what any of us want, obviously, which is why the subtitle of the book is How Good Intentions and Bad Ideas are Setting Up a Generation for Failure. Remember, we want to be the fire and wish for the wind. Next big idea, the untruth of emotional reasoning and its antidote, CBT. Quote, the list below shows 9 of the most common cognitive distortions that people learn to recognize in CBT. It is these distorted thought patterns that Greg began to notice on campus, which led him to invite John out to lunch, which led to us writing our Atlantic article and, eventually, this book. I'm going to walk you through, and I'm going to quote them on those 9 most common cognitive distortions of cognitive behavioral therapy. Here they are. Emotional reasoning. Letting your feelings guide your interpretations of reality. I feel depressed, therefore, my marriage is not working out. Catastrophizing. Focusing on the worst possible outcome and seeing it as most likely. It would be terrible if I failed. Overgeneralizing. Perceiving a global pattern of negatives on the basis of a single incident. This generally happened to me. I seem to fail at a lot of things. Dichotomous thinking, also known variously as black and white thinking, all or nothing thinking, and binary thinking. Viewing events or people in an all or nothing term. I get rejected by everyone, or it was a complete waste of time. Mind reading. Assuming that you know what people think without having sufficient evidence of their thoughts. He thinks I'm a loser. Labeling. Assigning global negative traits to yourself or others, often in the service of dichotomous thinking. I'm undesirable, or he's a rotten person. Negative filtering. You focused almost exclusively on the negatives and seldom noticed the positives. Look at all the people who don't like me. Discounting positives. Claiming that the positive things you or others do are trivial so that you can maintain a negative judgment. That's what wives are supposed to do, so it doesn't count when she's nice to me, or those successes were easy, so they don't matter. And finally, blaming. Focusing on the other person as the source of your negative feelings, you refuse to take responsibility for changing yourself. She's to blame for the way I feel now, or my parents caused all my problems. End quote. Now that's from the second chapter on the untruth of emotional reasoning. This great untruth says, in short, always trust your feelings. Eek. The wise approach? Well, Greg and John tell us that we want to challenge the potentially distorted thought patterns that are often behind the emotions we're experiencing. Their specific recommendation? Cognitive behavioral therapy. They tell us, and I quote again, everyone engages in these cognitive distortions from time to time. So cognitive behavioral therapy, or CBT, is useful for everyone. Wouldn't our relationships be better if we all did a little less blaming and dichotomous thinking and recognized that we usually share responsibility for conflicts? Wouldn't our political debates be more productive if we all did less overgeneralizing and labeling, both of which make it harder to compromise? End quote. And they tell us, teach children the basics of CBT. CBT stands for cognitive behavioral therapy, but in many ways, it's really just cognitive behavioral techniques, because the intellectual habits it teaches are good for everyone. Now, they also make the very compelling case for the idea that in an effort to protect our, quote, fragile youth, we're actually teaching them to practice the very distortions that CBT aims to fix. Little PS, I've got a link to the 2015 Atlantic cover story that led to this book, if you'd like to check it out. Next big idea, Van Jones's Anti-Fragile Gym. Quote, a second and more radical response opens up when you reject the speech is violence view. You can use your opponent's ideas and arguments to make yourself stronger. The progressive activist Van Jones, who was President Barack Obama's Green Jobs Advisor, endorsed this view in February of 2017 in a conversation at the University of Chicago's Institute for Politics. When Democratic strategist David Axelrod asked Jones about how progressive students should react when people they find ideologically offensive, such as someone associated with the Trump administration, are invited to speak on campus, Jones began by noting the distinction we described in Chapter 1 between physical and emotional safety. The authors quote Van Jones, who said, there are two ideas about safe spaces. One is a very good idea, and one is a terrible idea. The idea of being physically safe on a campus, not being subjected to sexual harassment and physical abuse, or being targeted specifically, personally, for some kind of hate speech, you are an N-word or whatever, I am perfectly fine with that. But there's another view that is now, I think, ascendant, which I think is just a horrible view, which is that I need to be safe ideologically. I need to be safe emotionally. I just need to feel good all the time, and if someone says something that I don't like, there's a problem for everyone else, including the university's administration. Haidt and Lukianoff then say, Jones then delivered some of the best advice for college students we have ever heard. He rejected the untruth of fragility and turned safetyism on its head. They quote Jones again, who said, I don't want you to be safe ideologically. I don't want you to be safe emotionally. I want you to be strong. That's different. I'm not going to pave the jungle for you. Put on some boots and learn how to deal with adversity. I'm not going to take all the weights out of the gym. That's the whole point of the gym. This is the gym. Back to Haidt and Lukianoff, who say Jones understands anti-fragility. Jones wants progressive college students to see themselves not as fragile candles, but as fire, welcoming the wind by seeking out ideologically different speakers and ideas, end quote. Now that's from a chapter in part two, all about bad ideas in action, in which they talk about intimidation and violence. The short story here, one of the themes of the book is the creation of a culture that they call safetyism, in which students and administrators try to create, quote, safe places and, quote, trigger warnings, etc., in an attempt to protect themselves emotionally and ideologically. Van Jones isn't a fan. I repeat, he tells us, I don't want you to be safe ideologically. I don't want you to be safe emotionally. I want you to be strong. That's different. I'm not going to pave the jungle for you. Put on some boots and learn how to deal with adversity. I'm not going to take all the weights out of the gym. That's the whole point of the gym. This is the gym. Now, of course, we come back to that idea of the spiritual gym, having weights. Those are your challenges in life. Go lift them. You're not there to lift styrofoam weights, right? You want the real thing. Well, in our notes on Brené Brown's Braving the Wilderness, we talk about the same basic idea as well. She tells us, this is Brené, I love Pema Chodron's lousy world teaching on this topic. In it, Chodron uses the lessons of the Indian Buddhist monk Shantideva to make a very powerful analogy about moving through the world constantly pissed off and disappointed. She says, and now she's quoting Pema Chodron, we're laughing, but that's what we all do. That is how we approach things. We think if we could just get rid of everything and cover it with leather, our pain would go away. Well, sure, because then it wouldn't be cutting our feet anymore. It's just logical, isn't it? But it doesn't make any sense, really. Shantideva said, but if you simply wrap leather around your feet. In other words, if you put on shoes, then you could walk across the boiling sand and the cut glass and the thorns, and it wouldn't bother you. So the analogy is, if you work with your mind, instead of trying to change everything on the outside, that's how your temper will cool down, end quote. And here's the direct quote on how Shantideva puts it. Check out the notes on The Way of the Bodhisattva for more of his wisdom. He says, to cover all the earth with sheets of leather, where could such amounts of skin be found? But with the leather soles of just my shoes, it is as though I cover all the earth. P.S. You can watch the clip of Van Jones in a link I've got in the note, and you can watch the clip of Pema Chodron giving that lecture as well. I've got both of them linked up in the note. Check out the PDF, the app, wherever you go to get your heroic wisdom on. Next and final big idea, heroic education, quote, something is going badly wrong for American teenagers, as we can see in the statistics on depression, anxiety, and suicide. Something is going very wrong on many college campuses, as we can see in the growth of call-out culture, in the rise in efforts to disinvite or shout down visiting speakers, and in changing norms about speech, including a recent tendency to evaluate speech in terms of safety and danger. This new culture of safetyism and vindictive protectiveness is bad for students and bad for universities. What can we do to change course? End quote. Now, those are the first words of the chapter on wiser kids in the final section of the book called Wising Up, in which Greg and John answer the question on how we can raise, quote, children who are wiser, stronger, and anti-fragile. They give us six suggestions, including wisdom on how to help our kids forge anti-fragile confidence by exposing them to risk and letting them engage in free play with other kids. Teaching them how to use CBT, note, they are incredibly direct in their recommendation here, and teaching them how to practice intellectual humility by reminding them of things like this, and I quote them again, having people around us who are willing to disagree with us is a gift. So when you realize you are wrong, admit that you are wrong and thank your critics for helping you see it. Now, the final chapter of the book is called Wiser Societies. These are the final words of that chapter in the book. I quote them one more time. In 1750, as he was founding the school that later became the University of Pennsylvania, Benjamin Franklin wrote this to Samuel Johnson. Nothing is of more importance to the public weal than to form and train up youth in wisdom and virtue. Wise and good men are, in my opinion, the strength of the state, much more so than riches or arms, which, under the management of ignorance and wickedness, often draw on destruction, instead of providing for the safety of a people. They continue by saying, this is a book about education and wisdom. If we can educate the next generation more wisely, they will be stronger, richer, more virtuous, and even safer. End quote. Now that sounds like heroic education to me. Here's to rejecting the three great untruths as we cultivate wisdom, discipline, love, and courage within ourselves, so we're in a position to teach them to our kids. That's the only way we'll be able to help create a world in which 51% of humanity is flourishing by 2051. And that is a quick look at this great book, The Coddling of the American Mind, How Good Intentions and Bad Ideas Are Setting Up a Generation for Failure by Greg Lukianoff and Jonathan Haidt. Let's enjoy some quotes from the sidebar, then we'll wrap it up. Here's a folk wisdom aphorism. Prepare the child for the road, not the road for the child. They quote the Buddha, who says, your worst enemy cannot harm you as much as your own thoughts, guarded. But once mastered, no one can help you as much, not even your father or your mother. They quote Alexander Solzhenitsyn for the final psychological truth and wisdom. The line dividing good and evil cuts through the heart of every human being. Back to the authors, who tell us, when we overprotect children, we harm them. Children are naturally anti-fragile, so overprotection makes them weaker and less resilient later on. If you see yourself or your fellow students as candles, you'll want to make your campus a wind-free zone. But young adults are not flickering candle flames. They are anti-fragile. Jonathan and Greg tell us, a culture that allows the concept of safety to creep so far that it equates emotional discomfort with physical danger is a culture that encourages people to systematically protect one another from the very experiences embedded in daily life that they need in order to become strong and healthy. Epictetus once said, what really frightens and dismays us is not the external events themselves, but the way in which we think about them. It is not things that disturb us, but our interpretation of their significance. Greg and Jonathan tell us, but discomfort is not danger. Students, professors, and administrators should understand the concept of anti-fragility and keep in mind Hannah Holbrum Gray's principle, education should not be intended to make people feel comfortable. It is meant to make them think. As Marcus Aurelius advised, choose not to be harmed and you won't feel harmed. Don't feel harmed and you haven't been. The more ways your identity can be threatened by casual daily interactions, the more valuable it will be to cultivate the Stoic and Buddhist and CBT ability not to be emotionally reactive. To not let others control your mind and your cortisol levels. Andrew Solomon once said, depressed people often stick pins into their own life rafts. The conscious mind can intervene. One is not helpless. Don't put pins in your own life raft. What a beautiful metaphor. Back to Greg and Jonathan, who tell us, teach children the basics of CBT. CBT stands for cognitive behavioral therapy, but in many ways, it's really just cognitive behavioral techniques because the intellectual habits it teaches are good for everyone. They tell us Aristotle often evaluated a thing with respect to its telos, its purpose, end, or goal. The telos of a knife is to cut. A knife that does not cut well is not a good knife. The telos of a physician is health or healing. A physician who cannot heal is not a good physician. What is the telos of a university? The most obvious answer is truth. We agree with former Northwestern University professor Alice Dreger, who urges activist students and professors to carpe datum, seize the data, In her book, Galileo's Middle Finger, best title ever, she contends that good scholarship must put the search for the truth first and the quest for social justice second. And finally, Greg Lukianoff and Jonathan Haidt tell us some of the parents may think that making sure their children do whatever it takes to succeed in advanced courses helps their children develop grit. But grit is often misunderstood as perseverance without passion. And that's tragic, psychology professor Angela Duckworth, author of the book Grit, told us. Perseverance without passion is mere drudgery. She wants people to devote themselves to pursuits that are intrinsically fulfilling. That is a very quick look at this great book. If you enjoyed this note, I think you'll enjoy the notes on Jonathan's other books we've featured. We've now covered all four of his books. The Happiness Hypothesis, what do we got? The Righteous Mind, this one, The Coddling of the American Mind, and his latest, The Anxious Generation. I think you'll also enjoy Grit by Duckworth and 10 to 25 by David Yeager. Now, as always, we will wrap this up with a question. What is the one idea that jumped out and landed most deeply for you? Think about that. And most importantly, as always, think about the one specific behavior you can engage in more consistently that will help you move from theory to practice to mastery, remembering the fact that mastery is simply more practice. Get on that. Make today another awesome day. Here's to forging anti-fragility.
We hope you enjoyed that philosopher's note. Go to heroic.us to download more.